Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Jessica Kabin. Jessica was named the 2017 Minnesota Principal of the Year and was also named the 2016 NAESP Vinci Digital Leader Early Learning Principal. She is the principal of Ellis Middle School, and it's her third year. This middle school is in Austin, Minnesota. Prior to that, she was the principal of the happiest place in southeastern Minnesota, the Woodson Kindergarten Center. She has worked in prior roles such as assistant middle school principal, special education supervisor, and special education teacher. She started her career as a music therapist. She holds a bachelor's degree in music theory from the University of Wisconsin, a master's in special education, and her administrative license as well. She enjoys quality time at home with her husband, Rob, and her two sons are in high school. Welcome to the podcast, Jessica.
Dana, it's great to be here today. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for being my guest on the podcast. And let's lead in talking about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to come out.
Yeah. So there's almost more times than not that I feel like I'm in the muck and the mud. But I could just reference last fall, we had a situation where we had some social media more from adults than kids kind of get a little bit out of control. And it really rattled me as a leader and an educator, because I realized and recognized the power of social media and how a story can create kind of a life of its own. And really, I felt like I had the scarlet letter in my community. I felt like everybody's like, oh, there she is. There's the one who can't control things or can't keep her building under control. And what I really learned from that situation is, we like kind of Joe Sanfilippo has said too, is if you don't share your story, somebody else is going to share it for you, and it might not be the truth. And so really have tried more so this year, you know, especially with COVID, being very transparent in my messaging and being very honest. Like, we don't have all the answers right now. We don't know how long we're going to be in a hybrid schedule, but what we do know is our primary concern is to keep your child safe. And I think looking back at that time, I was trying to perfect everything or try to control everything, and I couldn't. And I think in hindsight, if I could have just been more honest with the stakeholders and the parents and say, this is what we're working through, I would have probably had better self-care in that season and been able to move forward from it sooner.
Yeah. And you've learned a lot, as you said, just during these past 6 months with the pandemic. And you talked to me a little bit in the pre-chat about becoming more resilient during this season and planning for the school reopening. And, you know, how do you feel that the planning over the summer and now that you've reopened school in your hybrid setting, how do you feel like it's made you stronger as a leader?
I think one of the pieces that I was most afraid of, but probably the most beneficial to opening the year, was offering listening sessions. And so for someone who likes to be type A and controlling, leading in a forum where for 40 minutes I just listened was a little intimidating to start. But we offered, I think, at least 6 listening sessions over 2 weeks at the beginning of August when our governor released kind of the expectations for the fall. And that was the most beneficial feedback I got to start the year, because I got to hear from students, parents, our parents who are Spanish speaking, and our staff, certified and non-certified. And what I thought were the pressing issues for reopening school were not. And I'm really glad, because I really heard what the pressing issues were. And so then we could be more intentional about setting up plans and communication in regards to those situations. So I think that really helped for the resiliency, is to know what to ask, and then know, I think, as an educator, what we can't control. And that's the piece that's really hard, is sometimes some of our families are really struggling with their own mental health, and you can offer support, but we can't live in everybody's home, because once we start to take on everybody else's baggage or you know, history and trauma and not have outlets for that, it starts to weigh on our own mental health too. So I think setting some boundaries around what I can control and what I can't and what I need to let go has been really helpful with my overall mental health and well-being. And I think that's also demonstrated my ability to lead well. People are like, man, you just are like smiling and happy and like, you're not like stressed out as somebody actually said that they've seen me less stressed this year than any other year I've been here.
Yeah. You know, I think so as well. I've known Jessica being part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools Mastermind for about a year. And, you know, I think just thinking back to, you know, times like last fall and, you know, throughout the year and just kind of your demeanor now, you know, you seem much happier, you seem less stressed. And like you said, it's a hard time with the school start and everything, but you know, you realize you can't control everything. And I'm interested in knowing these listening sessions. Was that something you got set up or was it a group of principals in your district or was it a statewide decision?
It was just me. Okay. It was one of those seek forgiveness, mm-hmm. not ask permission kind of moments. Mm-hmm. So we just went ahead and opened the door. And really, I did practice, though, I will say that. I was super nervous about it. So I contacted 5 to 6 families that I knew from either my days at the kindergarten center or seventh grade families. And I said, can I go over this with you and then get your feedback as to, did I ask the right questions? Am I leading with the right information? And so that helped me feel more confident when I hit record and opened the Zoom call to 80 families and said, all right, let's go. Mm-hmm. And so then we did subsequent parent sessions with that same feedback, like, well, how do you want conferences to look? And then just left it open-ended. And what tools do you still need to be successful for this year? And I think it also shares with parents and the community that not only do we not have all the answers, but even if we have answers, we know we can be better by incorporating their voices as well. And I think that's something we're learning too, is we're really trying to reach out to community partnerships for high touch hotspots in the community. So when kids aren't with us on their distance learning days, they have an opportunity to go to a site that has Wi-Fi, that has volunteers, that's safe, and that people care about them. And so that's been kind of a neat opportunity to ask for help. And I don't think I would have done that before had I not engaged in this being vulnerable and asking for these listening sessions.
Mm-hmm. And when you have those listening sessions, did you have a set of scripted questions that you were going to ask?
Okay. Yes. Yep. Scripted questions. I walked through the protocol with everybody involved ahead of time because and obviously, Dana, you know me, I'm not quiet. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that people understood that my wait time and my silence wasn't anything more than allowing the process to work itself out and to allow people that reflective time. Mm-hmm. But anybody who knows me is like, she mad? Did her screen freeze? Like, is she muted and not know it? Because it's just not my nature to be quiet.
Yeah.
And so that was something I had to be really upfront with everybody on, is that I'm really, my silence is really honoring the importance of your voice in this process.
Well, hence the names, listening sessions, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of went against the personality traits that people know from you. But I think, yeah, as you said, that's the best way to figure out things. And so many districts did surveys, right? And you can get certain percentages from surveys, but just genuinely listening to what they have to say and the ideas, you know, it gives a lot more information. And, you know, I participated in a task force. They had like 12 task forces in my district, but you know, a lot of that task force meeting was part of a presentation from the district, right? And they had people put different things together on a Padlet, and that was part of their listening, right? But I think the way you approach things in your listening session, you know, you were able to gather a lot more information than I think a lot of these other districts did through the means that they used in the fall. And talk to me a little bit about the hybrid model that you're currently working in your 7-8 school, and any of the positive aspects that you've seen come out from this experience.
Well, I think so. What we did, based upon listening sessions, not only this summer but just feedback from when we were in crisis distance learning in the spring, was our 7-period day was not going to be optimal for anybody moving forward to start the school year, especially because we were welcoming 457th graders who were in more of an elementary model setting. Mm-hmm. So learning our learning management system, learning the building, just learning middle school structure in general was going to be a heavy lift. And so we went to a like mini mester. So we actually made our 7-period day an 8-period day. Okay. And for first quarter, kids get 4 classes. And for second quarter, they get 4 classes in a 90-minute block. Okay. And so what I think, and then hybrid would be half of the school comes Monday, Tuesday, and then their distance learning days are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The other half of the school has distance learning days Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they're in the building Thursday, Friday. And so the class is literally split in half so we can make sure we're not exceeding any occupancy levels in our building. And it's also unintentionally led a platform for high relationships because mm-hmm. your class is 11 kids or 12 kids or 15 kids. And I put some boundaries on that right away for teachers. We aren't, our staff wanted to try to be in person and remote at the same time. And the distance learning kids are receiving instruction that's either flipped instruction or it's all in our Schoology. Mm-hmm. So teachers aren't teaching to at-home learners and in-person learners at the same time. When the kids come into school, that's when they're getting enrichment or extension or additional supports and that relationship building, but all that direct teaching is in the Schoology folder so kids can access it at any time. Mm-hmm. What else can I tell you? I think we had never been a block schedule before, but I think it really did help kids, especially with what we call decreasing the cognitive load. And so knowing that a lot of our kids had never used Schoology as a platform or how to take attendance at home, how to send an email, like that's a good skill to have if you're going to be communicating with teachers. And so that eighth hour class we actually created called Academic Coach. And so every child in their first quarter has this class and I actually get to co-teach it, which is really, I've never taught middle school here ever in 13 years. So of my time in the district, but it's been really fun because it's social emotional learning, it's technology, and then it's Avid. Mm-hmm. And so one of the lessons last week was how to send an email. And so we had a script everybody went through, they had an assignment in which they had to send an email and craft it. And then we also shared with families like the on the rubric, like the 4 out of 4 email. Mm-hmm. So then parents could see, oh my gosh, my kid does know how to send an email. Now on the back end of that, we also spent a lot of time deleting emails and kind of had some record setting for the kid who had like 1,000 emails going back to 5th grade. But those are some of those skills that I think when they're at home and having to learn more independently, that cognitive load is decreasing because they're not thinking, how do I send an email? How do I get a hold of this teacher? How do I take attendance again? Where do I find that assignment? Where do I go to help? So having that class and really front loading that technology support and that social emotional learning, we really hope will provide some long-term benefits for our students and our staff.
Yeah. And that's so important to have that extra period, like you said, with those, just those simple things that, I mean, a lot of middle schoolers will say, oh, we know how to do that. Right. My son keeps saying, cause he's in 7th grade now, he keeps saying, well, the teacher went through where to find these things and, you know, reiterated this and that. And in his mind as a 7th grader, he's like, well, we know, but you know, it's so important to, it would clearly explain the procedures because we're in a different type of setting and also have those rubrics, like you're saying, show them the examples. And mm-hmm. especially, you know, elementary and middle schoolers, they're not used to writing their teacher emails, right? They're not used to advocating for themselves. So, you know, I think that's a great idea that you're having those practice sessions in that Avid / social emotional learning type mm-hmm. class. Tell me a little bit about how you're managing your own self-care and some of the ways that you've managed to just take those breaks during the summer when everything was so busy and, you know, you're planning for the reopening and, mm-hmm. you know, your book talks a lot about, you know, separation of your work, that work-life balance. So mm-hmm. how are you keeping that up?
So the summer, at the beginning of the summer, I did take a free online course, I think from the University of Washington by Dr. Clay Cook, and it was all about resiliency, and it was a very intensive course, but that was really foundational for me, because I really recognized that when we were in crisis distance learning, I was not taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. And I could definitely, by the summer, see that in my inability to zip up pants. Mm-hmm. And motivation and energy and just enjoyment of life in general. So I think those things really culminated into a July of really reframing how to move forward in this kind of more chaotic season of unknowns. And so I have like three models where it's expect the best, celebrate success, and rest. Those are my guiding pieces. And it's based upon some of the mantras in our building, but mm-hmm. with expect the best, it's helping me reframe in my mind. Cause sometimes people will say, hey, I need to meet with you. And then all of a sudden my head goes to like, oh, they're going to quit, or, oh, it's this or that. And usually it's nothing, but my head always makes it out to be 100 times worse. Mm-hmm. And so I'm spending a lot of time reframing. Okay. So this could be an opportunity to build on collaboration skills, or this might be an opportunity to really expect the best from other people and recognize that teachers and parents might have additional stressors I'm not aware of. And that's why it's coming across strong. Mm-hmm. Celebrating success is just these mini milestones. Like, oh, I walked the dog 4 days this week instead of two. Like, yay. Or, you know, or hey, I didn't eat 8 Snickers today. Awesome. Or I got to finish my reading, or I spent time with a friend this weekend. So like setting these little mini goals that you could also kind of base upon the balance, like a pirate quadrants too, mm-hmm. and just celebrate the little things, because the big things are really hard to see right now. So focusing on small self-care steps. And then rest has been something, and I think most of us are probably experiencing this, where we're just really restless. Mm-hmm. And I even was just talking to the administrative assistant team out here that like, even when I'm laying down or sleeping, my head is having a hard time slowing down, because mm-hmm. we're just constantly thinking about what could happen or what isn't happening. And so making sure that we're getting optimal sleep. And sometimes it's just resting, like shutting the phone off, shutting the TV off, turning the news off, finding a book or nature walks have been something I've really been, it's been beneficial for me that I've never taken the time to do. I'm a runner, but walking is really helping me with my self-care and self-regulation right now. And so that's something that I'm going to continue moving forward, is it just kind of helps me recenter myself. And so even over the summer, one of the things I would do every day is at 10:30, I go for a half hour walk around our school. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes I'd listen to a podcast. Sometimes I would just walk. Sometimes I set up meetings with my counterpart, who's the principal of the neighboring school. We'd meet halfway and we'd walk together. And it was really healthy and building a stronger relationship with my colleague. It was really reminding myself to get up and move instead of being in Zoom meetings all day. Mm-hmm. And then third, it just really recentered me. Like when I came back, I felt like I was more refreshed and thought mm-hmm. of new ideas or new ways to tackle things just by getting up and moving a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And when you're in the building now, do you try to have some of those talks and meetings with different colleagues while you're walking? Like we're doing yep. a walk and talk rather than meeting in the classroom or meeting in your office.
Yes. And I think it's been fun now. So, because it's still nice in Minnesota, because right now it's September 21st. Now, September 22nd, we could have a blizzard, because that's Minnesota. You never know what's going to happen. And then like in January, it could be 70 degrees. But we've been doing walks with our classes. So our academic coach class, we've gone out and done walks. And it's really fun because kids let down their guard a little bit less, because I think we're walking not 6 feet apart, but still kind of shoulder to shoulder. So I'm no longer the teacher or the expert. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned so much about the students that I'm teaching in that class, because we're just more informal and I can ask questions and they're more apt to answer them in that kind of environment. So it's been kind of fun to do too.
Yeah. You know, and I think of those times, you know, that maybe have been like once or twice during a school year when I've led or taught students and taken them outside and, you know, had those walks around the track, or, you know, had some journal writing in the woods behind the school. And, you know, those were so like surprising for the kids to like get out and do that. But, you know, I think right now, just with the pandemic, we're taking more of that opportunity. And like you're saying, you hear a lot more from the kids because you're not kind of that sage on the stage, right? In front
yep.
of the classroom, or, you know, in that formal setting. So, you know, I hope a lot more schools that are meeting in person in some sort of setting are getting outside and, you know, celebrating the nice weather that we're still having. So,
well, and think about it this way too, is at least here in the Midwest, this spring, we didn't leave the house. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we were all kind of self-quarantining. And so we missed spring, and a lot of us missed a lot of summer. At least here, we didn't have all of our summer athletic programs running. And so our kids didn't get to go to soccer or basketball or some of those things that they're used to, or they're just more nervous about being around each other. So nature and play is really just a really great way to introduce ourselves back to each other and interacting with each other and just kind of reintroducing our new normal. So I think that's been really, really helpful too, is just kind of slowly reintroducing relationship building in person versus screen time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. And let's segue a little bit into, you've found a little bit of extra time during the pandemic because you used to be so busy traveling. You would mm-hmm. give keynotes, speak at conferences all the time. So kind of let me know, like, what was your typical schedule during a month when it came to travels? And what are you thinking of doing once conferences start coming back? I know there are some taking place virtually. Are you thinking of speaking so much at conferences, or are you maybe thinking of redesigning things?
So that's a great question, Dana. So I think that this, I sense that I won't be the only one making life changes mm-hmm. once COVID becomes part of our recent history and not our mm-hmm. future or current status. So I think for me, I did, like you said, I have teenage boys that, you know, within 3 to 4 short years won't be in the house anymore. Mm-hmm. And so COVID really gave us a chance to connect on a deeper level, spend more time together, and made me really rethink, like, do I want my kids to remember me traveling all the time during these last few years? Or do I want my kids to remember me being more involved in their sports and their activities and in home? So mm-hmm. kind of recalibrating the work in that field in education, but I'm also spending a lot more time connecting with women just in general, and not just women in education, because I'm learning that unrest and stress and seeking balance isn't resonant just with educators. Mm-hmm. And so really trying to branch out a little bit in working more just with women in their own leadership and whatever they're doing. So that's been kind of fun to start to maybe go to a few different conferences outside of education, join a couple different writing groups and maybe branch out a little bit in some of the writing that I'm doing, not just book wise, but blogging and interacting with magazines and things too.
Great. Talk to me a little bit about a student. You shared in the pre-chat a student that you had who was almost up for expulsion, or a student that you've managed to make a difference in the life of.
Oh, goodness. Now, there's not so many, but I think as educators, as I've been in education for 20 years, and I can name 5 that mm-hmm. I've been able not just to be involved in their school life, but their life beyond. And I think when you have that student, they become just a part of your why. And people are like, well, that was so nice what you did, or that was such a blessing. And I think when you get to that point with the relationship, you realize that they were more of the blessing to you than you were to them. And so let's who do we want to talk about today? Let's talk about Sadiq. So Sadiq was my kindergartner, mm-hmm. one of my first classes when I was a teacher, and he and I spent a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. He had some challenging behaviors and that we worked through, but he was extremely gifted mm-hmm. in writing and reading and the arts. And we worked together with his guardian to really make sure that he was in the most appropriate mainstream settings. And then by fourth or fifth grade, I ended up moving down to Austin, and he was still in the Twin Cities area. And we stayed connected. I remember when I had my son, he had a baby gift for him. Yeah. And even when I was pregnant, he always talked to my belly and all these things. He really became part of our family. And then when I had my son, Kenny, I would go with him on maternity leave to meet Sadiq and his family. And then come middle school, you know, we had some transitional things where I got to continue to be an advocate for him and his family, even though I was no longer his teacher. I worked in the district, but I could work as kind of a liaison to kind of figure out how things were working. And then I 2 years ago, I got to go to his graduation party as his distinguished guest. And it was amazing. And the one piece to that journey that I share as part of my story, not his, is when I was here as the middle school assistant principal, and he was maybe in sixth grade, his guardian passed away. And so before she passed, about 6 weeks before, she called me and asked me to be the person to tell him and create a social story around that. And it wasn't just about a social story at that point. It was really an opportunity for my husband and Kenny, who is now older, to spend time on the weekends with him to give his guardian and her friends some respite. So we went to all the zoos in the area and, you know, we just listened to him. We took him out for dinner. It was so beneficial for us just to let him share his story with this and what he was struggling with, but also to know that we could serve this family in this capacity. Mm-hmm. And then I still have it actually right behind my desk as we're talking. I still have the memorial, and I got to read at her funeral.
Wow.
Her and her son. And so on so many different levels, that young man has permeated who I am as an educator, mm-hmm. who I am as a mother, who I am as an advocate for those who maybe haven't had a voice before. And you just never know what your impact is on a family. You may not have that opportunity that I had, but like I said, I have the memorial right behind my computer to remember on the really rough days that I'm here to advocate for all kids. And sometimes that looks really different. Yeah. And sometimes that transcends well past when they were a student in my classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And when you're kind of following that student's journey throughout K-12 and seeing them graduate and, you know, keeping touch with the family as well, you know, it's inspiring to hear, you know, how they were able to reach out to you and feel like they trusted you and, you know, you were able to provide that comfort when his guardian died. Let's talk a little bit about your son now, your younger son, he's at your school. So how is that being your son's principal? And, you know, your school is only a 2 year long seventh and eighth grade. So you only see them for a certain amount of time. So talk to me about the dynamics there.
Yeah, absolutely. And for your listeners, I think the other piece to that story is Isaiah. We adopted Isaiah when he was five. And actually, we had some difficulties in his adoption, which also timeline paralleled when Sadiq lost his guardian. And so on a personal level, we were able to fill a void that we had with losing our son by helping support another family who was losing their mom. And so it was emotionally a really challenging time for me, but in a way I got to fill a void too for others. But so when Isaiah entered our family, I took a position to be the kindergarten principal. So this is not Isaiah's first rodeo with his mom as his principal. He had been in the country about 6 months, and then we went to school together. So that was our therapist, who we actually still have, had really encouraged me to find ways to be involved in his life every single day. Now, he did not say that necessarily meant to be his principal. I might have gone a little overboard, but it really helped me to build that solid relationship with him, but then also to have intimate knowledge about what it is to be an English language learner in school and the challenges that come with that, but then also the incredible talents of our English language learning teachers and our general education teachers, relentlessness to help support all learners. So that was, I mean, it was incredible to be a part of that and then to have the opportunity to come back here. So Isaiah was my first class of kindergartners, and he's an eighth grader now. And so this cohort on campus I had in kindergarten. So out of 850 kids, at least 700 of them, we had kindergarten together. So middle school's amazing. I'm really glad I had the opportunity to come back here after being the assistant principal. But being a parent and a principal is, I'm there's some days where I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to walk by this teacher and my kid hasn't turned in any work in 2 weeks. So that's a little humbling.
Yeah.
There's also a perk to that because you have keys to the building. So Saturday, guess what we turned in? His homework. His homework. Thank you, Mr. Walker, for the gentle reminder. But I think that's been really, I mean, I'll never regret having these years with him and just getting to know who he is as a person outside of who I see at home in a really authentic way. It's just peeking by the window, seeing him at lunch, cheering on his soccer team, supporting him in band and his honors courses, and just seeing him just become his own person. I've been so impressed and amazed.
Yeah, you have that unique lens, as you know, you're kind of on the outside, like if you're walking in, you know, by a classroom or something, and not directly like teaching him, like, you know, I've heard of some teachers have taught their own children, but you know, just kind of seeing that personality, right, that he might not be sharing at home. And you've talked a little bit about, you know, the relationships that you had with kids that are now in seventh and eighth grade that you had as kindergartners, but also, you know, you said you're kind of that grand principal because you have students or siblings, you know, they come back and like you had a story about the car line. We might not go into detail, but you know, you see these people come back years later, and you know, even though you only have students in the building for 2 years, how are you able to keep connections with those families?
I think, and we're in a more rural area of Minnesota, so it's about 25,000 people in the community, but I think just being visible has helped with that. So when I was at the kindergarten center, I did morning bus duty every day. And now as the middle school principal, I'm out at parent drop-off. And I think just having that connection that they see me outside in a non-threatening way has really helped people to be like, oh, okay, she's or my goofy dancing or my Green Bay Packers sweater that I get booed on. That's been really, really fun. And I think too, just being open to staying connected. And and my two grand principal stories really were from Facebook. Like the kids turned 21 and found me on Facebook. And then Dana alluded to, I've had two students of mine now have babies. And so then we've gone to the house with baby gifts and my husband gets to take pictures with the baby. And an interesting story, Dana, we had talked off screen here about a parking lot pickup. And so that student came back, a former student of mine. She's now like 22. And I talked to her today. I said, where are you working? She's like, well, not working right now. I'm like, well, we got to get you a job. And so now we're meeting to try to figure out where we need to go to fill out applications and things like that. And I think the piece that I would share is just that as much as I do have boundaries with what I do, I think it's okay to still have relationships with kids after they leave and ask those questions and stay involved. And it doesn't mean that you have to, every kid that comes by, you know, meet and help them fill out applications, but you know, as an educator, who really would benefit from that additional support and who just needs some encouragement or cheerleading. And so knowing that they're always your kids really kind of helps make that a important personal mission of mine.
Yeah, that's so great to hear, you know, when you're seeing those kids again, and they might not feel like they can reach out to many other adults, but you know, they'll reach out to you and you're helping them find that job. Let's talk a little bit about your current rebranding a little bit on your website and your next steps for how you'd like to continue to serve.
So Dana's part of the mastermind when we had a big conversation about what color scheme I was going to go for on my blog and it's a newsletter, but really looking at that elevate, you know, talking about doing one thing just a little bit differently or a little bit better, and that purpose, passion, and peace. And so really thinking about peace again, of just that rest and self-care. Passion is just cultivating that, those joys and the whys. And then the purpose is finding out how to make that happen every day. And purpose has been really helpful for me in coming back after COVID into school, because you can get, it's almost like when you get on social media and don't really have an intention for it, you could spend 30 to 45 minutes doing nothing but scrolling things that you didn't really need to know. You can spend so much time researching PPEs and you know, the newest social distancing and get caught up in lunchroom dismissal that you forget that you're still the instructional leader. And so I'm really intentional about that 90-minute visioning block every week of going back and saying, okay, how am I doing on the goals that we set? How am I communicating that out? What information do I need coming in to do better? And just putting that on the calendar and then doing it is really important. So you stay grounded in that purpose. But then like with that rebranding too, is just taking that a lens of that outside of education and seeing, mm-hmm. you know, does this same mantra help support other women and other leaders outside of education also have more intentional opportunities to elevate their work at home and in life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important today is, you know, we see a lot of these women are, you know, taking on more of the mothering role and still trying to work a full-time job for a lot of those moms that are in that remote school setting, right? And, you know, I think more than ever, you know, helping them see their purpose and, you know, continue to support. Yeah, so, you know, we would really, you know, looking forward to seeing kind of how that evolves in the next year or so.
Yes.
So it's been great talking to you today on the podcast. Out of everything we talked about today, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Oh, goodness. And I was trying to think, okay, so we're going to be in like December when this probably comes out,
yeah,
or January.
January, yeah.
So what are you celebrating? I think that would be really important. So going back to celebrating success, looking back, because we're recording this on September 21st. And so think back to September. What were you most worried about? What were you, and where are you now? And did you accomplish what you thought? Were things as bad? Were they better? What did you learn from it? And what's one thing that you're like, gosh, I did that. Mm-hmm. Everything else that happened, but I got that done. Like, yeah. This is something I'm really proud of, because those mini wins are going to be really important, as we don't know what's going to be coming next, mm-hmm. but you can build on those mini wins and successes to just continue to become more resilient in who you are at work and at home.
Yeah. Great things. Great words to end with. So where can people find you online? What's your social media handle and your website?
So Twitter and Instagram is Jessica Cabine. And then on Facebook, it's Principal In Balance, Principal IN Balance. I do have a website as well. And then I link with my newsletter too. So I have a monthly newsletter that comes out and just talks about different things in regards to communicating with others, wellness and self-care, and then includes just some people to follow, things we're reading, just to highlight a couple of different resources for people. And I try to keep it just at once a month, mm-hmm. Pretty quick 5-minute read.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I hope your listeners are safe and feeling accomplished and continuing to do their very best in a really unique season.